Welcome to Spotcast. This is Season 3, Episode 5. My name is Tim Mitra, and I'm in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jaime Lippis Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
And we have on the line from Mississauga, Ontario, Jonathan P. Kuhlein.
Let's go Raptors! Let's go Raptors!
Let's go Raptors. Yes, apparently the Raptors did a buzzer beater again, and
it's a glorious thing.
It's a glorious world. Let me rephrase that. World champion Raptors, Toronto Raptors.
Absolutely correct.
Still yes. True until the finals are done this year. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Sure. And you know who's going to leave the White House, right? Yeah. Sure. All going to happen. Alrighty. So let's start with some fact check. Tasty Wheat is what I remember them referring to the gruel that they were eating on the Matrix.
Yeah, they said that it was like Tasty Wheat from inside the Matrix, but the gruel on the outside tasted just like it, so that made them wonder if it was, did they know that that's what Tasty Wheat tasted like, or is that what Tasty Wheat tasted like because that's what it tasted like?
I don't know, but I remember the young lad with the funny hat said, it's like Tasty Wheat.
Yeah.
It looked like, you know, liquidy oatmeal.
Yeah, gross.
And another piece of follow-up here is that Haley Joel Osment did the voice of O'Connor in the last episode. I don't know if you guys caught that or not.
No,
it didn't ring as his voice to me.
Yeah, I found it when I was doing the editing. I was looking for pictures and stuff like that. I saw that. It wasn't in the IMDb, you know, in any sort of timely way. But yeah, eventually. And I was mentioning my pick last week was the opera singer doing the original series theme song with the woman's voice, you know, that's obviously written by Alexander Courage, which I forgot to mention last week. So that's it for the fact check. Let's move on to the headlines. Let me take it away.
Yeah, we're starting out with a real sad one. Chadwick Boseman, many folks know him as the T'Challa, the Black Panther. Unfortunately, he lost his 4-year battle with cancer. And if you were like me, you were completely in the dark and said, wait, what? He's had colon cancer, and he's had it for 4 years. So he's 43, so he's 39, if I did the math correctly, when he started his battle. So
yeah, 43 and buff, too. I mean, it wasn't like he was a sloucher or whatever, right? And Jaime pointed out on the show yesterday to Mark and I thought it was a little funny, but that this is somebody who's younger than him. In fact, I think he's younger than you too, John, right?
Well, not currently younger, just he got cancer around my age. So at 39, which is the age I'm at now.
Oh, you haven't hit the big 40 yet?
I've not hit the big 40 yet, but yeah, this is pretty big. And they had the celebration over the weekend on Disney owns what? ABC, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they had the, what was it called? It was like The King or something similar, sort of a documentary thing that they had running. And of course, they were showing Black Panther and et cetera on almost like marathon over the weekend here. So it's a sad loss for the world.
Mm-hmm.
They're a good gentleman.
Surprising, yeah.
It's one of those things that you just don't believe. I came across my newsfeed and my jaw just dropped. I thought it was wrong. Like, it just did not seem real that a man as vibrant as we've seen him on the screen the last few years could be gone so young. It's just devastating. And it's funny because he had made, I guess, appearances in the last few months, and people had sort of said, well, he was looking a little gaunt, and some people were wondering if he was like losing some weight for a different film or something. But I guess now we know what the truth is. But yeah, it's a real shocker. I mean, you know, it's such a strange thing how different people react to those kind of things. You know, some people obviously, they just want to hunker down and spend time with their family. And he chose to embrace his art in the time that he knew that he had left, and left so many memorable performances, not just as T'Challa, as the Black Panther, but, you know, Jackie Robinson in the movie there. And, you know, he was just so talented. It's such a heartbreaking loss.
Oh, sure. Speaking of heartbreaking losses, Jonathan.
Yeah, we lost somebody now, somebody who I've lived a nice long life, but Joe Ruby passed away this last week as well. You may not know it until I say Ruby Spears, and then you might suddenly realize, oh, I do know that name. So Joe Ruby was one of the creators of Scooby-Doo, co-creator of Scooby-Doo. And along with that, so many of those popular series from the 1960s, he worked on the original original Space Ghost series, the Herculoids, Captain Caveman, and then he even did some work on the Punky Brewster live action show and stuff like that. Like, he's a pretty prodigious animation icon, and he was 87. He passed away last week in his home in California, and they're saying natural causes, so, you know, best you can hope for, I guess. But yeah, he was one of the giants of that era to create all these things that have stood the test of time. You know, we're talking 50 plus years now for some of these characters. Scooby-Doo is going to live a long, long time past his lifetime. It's pretty good legacy. Next, this one was today, and this caught, I think, a bunch of people off guard. So this morning, Dwayne The Rock Johnson announced that he and his family had had COVID and that they're now recovering. And that was quickly followed by this news that the Batman, Robert Pattinson, has been diagnosed with COVID-19. So in the wake of that, they've shut down production of the Batman film that they're filming in England. And no clarity on when that's going to resume. It makes you wonder too, because apparently they were reopening these movie productions with, you know, great effort around obviously making sure that everyone was safe and everyone was getting tested and everything else. And it sounds like it was during one of these routine tests that they discovered that Robert had been diagnosed. So yeah, kind of a surprising day. You know, obviously we've seen our share of famous athletes, politicians, celebrities, you know, contract COVID over the last few years. A lot of them have recovered, thankfully. But this one, yeah, it's surprising. Obviously, Robert's young enough that you'd hope that his prognosis is very good, but it's still pretty just jarring to find that news on your newsfeed.
For sure. And next up is Tame.
Yeah, weirdly continuing a mini theme of viruses taking over the world. Netflix has announced they're making an original live action TV series based on the Resident Evil video game, which Resident Evil is based on a virus that gets out loose from a lab and turns people into zombies. And this one follows apparently a split timeline of, timelines is incorrect. I'm reading it from the article. I'm pretty sure they mean set across two time periods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you see these characters as younger and then older, and then presumably you got to start, you know, filling in sort of the pieces of what happened in between as you have the time jump.
So no Mila Jovovich in this?
No, they do mention here that this is the same company that made the Mila Jovovich starring six Resident Evil films. My gosh, six? I think I've only seen three of them. We need to catch up on those. I don't think it has anything to do with that character. It's a little unclear if it's sort of in its own little universe, the way the Resident Evil films were, or if it's tied into the Resident Evil video game series plots, or if it's kind of more of an adaptation that's in its own little universe. Hard to tell from what they give here.
Now the Game of Thrones.
So continuing with Netflix, they also announced that Game of Thrones showrunners David Benioff and Dan Weiss are going to do their next series on Netflix. Now, we knew that they had signed a exclusive contract with them, so we knew it was coming. But now they confirm what it is, and they're going to be doing this adaptation of The Three-Body Problem, which is a very, very, very well-received Chinese science fiction novel from about 10, 12 years ago, which is a trilogy. So they're going to be adapting this into a series. Now, obviously, they've had some successes and some might say some less than successes in adapting, books to television before. It'll be interesting to see what they do with this series. I don't know a lot about it, I must admit. I know that the people who have read it really enjoyed it. But apparently it is sort of very sprawling. It's supposed to be starting in the 1960s, and it's about the first contact that humans have with alien civilization, and it sort of continues over the course of time and tells the story of from the beginning of this contact through how the two cultures adapt and work together and stuff like that. So, yeah, pretty cool to see what they can come up with this. I think definitely this will be worth a watch.
Weren't they supposed to do something else a while back, or they did something else after?
So originally they were going to do the What If the South Had Won the Civil War thing for HBO. That got a lot of blowback, and they decided not to do that. Then they signed a contract because they were going to do their own trilogy of Star Wars films.
Right, right.
And then they decided to go their separate ways, and then they signed a very, very, very lucrative deal to do exclusive content for Netflix. This is the first of that.
All right.
Next up, continuing on our theme of Netflix, I don't know if you guys saw this one, in talking about all the different services that are available, all the different streaming services. So Netflix has got a website up now where you can watch their content for free. It's not obviously the full Netflix smorgasbord, but there's a pretty good content little list up there. They put up some of their movies, so you can watch the Bird Box, The Two Popes, which was nominated for some Oscars. You can watch Murder Mystery, which is an Adam Sandler movie that's popular on the service. And then they've got the first episodes of Stranger Things, When They See Us, which is an amazing profile about the kids who were arrested in New York City and accused of rape, and it's amazing. I totally recommend that. Love is Blind, one of their reality series. Grace and Frankie, and even Boss Baby, one of the Boss Baby animated shows. But they're putting it all on their site for free so that you can basically get your first taste. So it's netflix.com/watch-free. And if you go there, you can watch all this content. And then they encourage you, hey, did you like this show? Would you like more of this show or movie? You can find it on Netflix.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me, especially for things that have a whole bunch of seasons. Well, at least, you know, a few seasons, like Stranger Things, where, you know, you've got the new season that's coming out soon-ish, we hope, you know, based on whatever delays that came out of a pandemic hitting the production. But it's like, hey, catch up. If you've never watched Stranger Things, you might as well binge it now. Well, it's free. And then, like you said, Jonathan, if you like it, cool. Now you can start paying us money so you can continue now that you're hooked and watch the latest season when it becomes available.
Yep.
And The Mandalorian, second season?
Second season premieres on October 30th.
Yeah.
Ooh. So that'll be good. I have personally, notably, not signed up for Disney Plus yet. And this story plus the next one that we're about to talk about gives me a pretty good indication of when I'm going to sign up. And I'll talk more about it when we talk about the next topic. But
so season three, right?
And season three. Just wait till I can binge the entire thing in 1 month. The entire, you know, 5 to 7 year seasons of episodes. Yeah. No, I just never got around to it because as we've talked about in this show, although we joke about, you know, collecting them all when it comes to the streaming services, I sort of try not to. And given that I don't have, you know, children who would appreciate all of the back catalog of Disney Plus, and I've seen every Star Wars movie and every Marvel Cinematic Universe movie, I didn't really feel like there was enough content on there to subscribe. And Mandalorian was like kind of close because I'd heard really good things about it. Big Star Wars fan. And the big sort of discussion in my household was, well, we want to watch Hamilton, but how badly do we want to watch Hamilton? Like, is that plus Mandalorian enough? And it wasn't. Season 2 of Mandalorian gets me really close.
But wait, wouldn't it cost you like a huge amount of dollars to go see Hamilton in the real, like in the theater? Like,
think of the savings, Jaime. Think of the savings.
I know, it's a very irrational thing, right? Probably burned more opportunity cost thinking about it, you know, yeah. Whatever hourly rate you think I could charge for my services than would have actually been saved by just plunking down the $6.99 or $7.99, whatever it is for 1 month.
We didn't talk about this on the show yesterday on MTJC because it's more fitting with that one, but it sort of fits with this show too. And that has to do with the free year of Apple TV you get when you buy Apple hardware. You buy a phone, you buy an iPad, you buy a Mac, you get a free year of Apple TV, but you don't get another free year of Apple TV if you buy more gear a year later, which is in the case of me, right? So I think my Apple TV subscription was tied to a phone last year, I've since bought thousands and thousands of dollars worth of computers and iPads, and I will not be able to get another free year of Apple TV, which I find, you know, it's typical of, you know, once they got you on the service, they don't care, you know?
Yeah.
Too bad.
Yeah, it was a way to bootstrap a whole bunch of people getting used to watching. And then for me, given when I bought my laptop and activated my Apple TV Plus subscription, I've got a little calendar reminder that right around the time of the Academy Awards in February is when my Apple TV Plus subscription is going to be canceled, most likely by me. In the interim, I'm probably going to check out something like Ted Lasso. I've been hearing reasonably good things about it. Figure it's worth at least an episode or two to give it a try. Because
what's Ted Lasso? What is that?
That is
a comedy. Yeah,
yeah. That's the American guy who goes and becomes a football coach, a European football coach.
Oh, this is on Apple TV.
Yeah, I think it's on Apple TV Plus.
Jason Sudeikis, I think. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, shows on Apple TV are good, but I mean, are they pay for them good? I mean, you know, they're really well done. I will say that.
What's the monthly subscription fee? I'm in the same boat as you, Tim. I got a free subscription when I bought a new phone last year.
Yeah.
And so I signed up, but I haven't really gone too far in the catalog, but I'm curious as to what they actually expect people to pay for that content.
I think it's $4.99 a month.
$4.99 a month? Well, that's not so bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was sort of the discussion of like, it's got to be, you know, only $4.99 a month because they don't have the massive back catalogs that somebody like a Netflix or a Disney can bring to bear. And Disney's got their entire thing for, I should know this is a fact check, $6.99 or $7.99. I can't remember if it's $7 or closer to $8. But nevertheless, it's cheap.
Tune into next week's fact check to find out which one it is.
Well, I'm doing a live fact check while he talks.
Yeah, and you're right, Tim. I do think that a lot of the stuff on Apple TV Plus is good, but I don't know that they've had the, like, this is compelling and everybody's going to watch this at the same time content. They haven't really struck gold the way that, like, The Mandalorian has done for Disney Plus, and they haven't struck it with, like, a Stranger Things or House of Cards type thing that Netflix has had, or a Sopranos or Silicon Valley or Game of Thrones that HBO has had. They've been successful, I think, but not astoundingly successful.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm sort of stuck on, I'm trying, like, how do I find out what it costs? Because I can't, because I already have a subscription. I can't figure out what it's going to cost me. Plus, the other thing is that's annoying, of course, for me is I found out I have hundreds of dollars in Apple Store credit, and then I have hundreds of dollars in iTunes credit. Like, can I use any of that for Apple TV, right?
Mm, yeah.
Really annoying.
So searching on the internet confirms that Apple TV Plus is $4.99 per month.
US.
After your trial, and Disney Plus is $6.99 a month, or an annual rate of $69.99 a year.
Anyway, got to figure out how to move some of that money around that I've already, that Apple or of mine that Apple already owns, right? So,
well, like I said, I'll pay you Apple Store money for your iTunes money, because I actually do use the iTunes money.
Oh, do you? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can trade. Alrighty. What I've been doing at work is you know, occasionally somebody needs a piece of software for their development work, and we can't really get a hold of it, so I just go in my iTunes money and just buy the app for them, right?
Cause yeah,
it's throwing around money, as they say, right?
There you go.
Anyway, we were talking about Mandalorian. What were we talking about? I forget.
Yeah, and let's just roll right into additional news related to Mulan. So Mulan, as we've talked about, is going to be available for an extra price if you want to watch it on day one when it drops this very week on September 4th. But if you're willing to wait 3 months, on December 4th, it will be available to all Disney Plus subscribers as part of their subscription. So it's effectively, if you think about it, if you're paying, you know, on September 4th or earlier, you're kind of doing the, oh, it's as if we went to the movie theaters and saw it then. And then in a very short time period, pretend that 3 months later, it normally went to streaming. Is sort of the way I would look at it. And this right here gives me an indication of when I'll probably end up subscribing to Disney Plus, because assuming The Mandalorian, I haven't looked at their schedule, assuming they have the 8, you know, or so weeks of episodes. Well, we go from October 30th, that gets us to the end of December, which means that I could probably start my subscription on the 4th of December, start watching The Mandalorian, maybe watch Mulan, maybe watch Hamilton, and then sort of catch up with the rest of the world and watch The Mandalorian season 2 with everybody else. Because it'll all be as part of that $6.99, you know, 1 month subscription, unless they do something funny to sort of tease out extra money and say, oh, because of the holidays, we're going to move the final episode of Mandalorian to like January, just to tease out another $6.99 out of people.
Well, there is a whole 8 shows of the making of The Mandalorian. And I watched like the first one. It's just like really dense stuff, but cool documentary on that. I still haven't watched the animated version of Mulan yet either, so that's, you know, on my list, I guess.
Wait, does that mean you didn't fully get the flavor, pun very much intended, on the Rick and Morty Mulan Szechuan sauce obsession?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I do remember the story. Yeah, I remember that for sure. Alrighty.
So yeah. The other thing that's coming coming, Jaime, is the Marvel stuff is coming there too, right?
Yeah. Do they have revised dates for that post, you know, COVID disruption?
Yeah, I don't, I'm just looking. I know that they, because they were going to do Falcon and the Winter Soldier, but I think they moved that till next year. But they moved WandaVision up. WandaVision is the Vision of the Scarlet Witch series. I think that's December. I think it's coming in December.
Oh, perfect, perfect.
And Loki is next spring. Yeah, I think that's where we're at right now, is that WandaVision, I think, is coming first. Because I don't think they've got a date for Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It was supposed to premiere in August, but then they had to halt production. And then now they've gone back to filming. So they're supposed to film this fall in the Czech Republic. And then they've moved it to 2021. So I guess it's more outdoor, like they're shooting in the environment. I think maybe WandaVision's more on set. So like, it's a lot easier to continue filming or continue producing.
Hmm. Well, the continuing the Disney and Star Wars sort of theme here on a more unfortunate but kind of insightful take is this this cover story from the British edition of GQ magazine has a really good interview and coverage of John Boyega, who played Finn in the sequel trilogy Star Wars. And I'm just going to read the bold quote that they put here. John Boyega: "I'm the only cast member whose experience of Star Wars was based on their race." And if that doesn't entice you to read this, I'd say nothing else will, because it was actually a really good read. And, you know, I think in many ways he's right. Like, granted, the pull quote that he has here, in fairness, isn't 100% true, because you also had Kelly Marie Tran, who plays Rose Tico, who also had problems related to her race and her character. But I think the intent is there that, like, as we talked about on episodes of this very show, when each of the sequel trilogy episodes came out, there was pretty good promise from The Force Awakens setup for Finn and what his character might do, and possibly even his burgeoning relationship with Rey, which never, you know, spoilers if you haven't seen those movies, doesn't work out. And his character gets yanked quite a bit around in the second movie and in the final movie. By that point, it kind of seemed like his role was about, like, hey, your reason here is to be black and show up on the poster, right? It was like, very cynically, it kind of seems like that's where he ended up. And this article does, I think, a pretty good job of sort of explaining sort of his view and a very negative view of the stuff that he had to go through. It's very insightful, very much in line with the times. And, I hope that we as a society can do better. And more specifically, I hope that Disney can do better with its future endeavors.
Yeah, I think it's harsh, but I think it's like, it's very legit. Like, you're right. By the time, I mean, we talked about it obviously with the Kelly Marie Tran stuff, because there was a lot of heat and controversy around the fact that she went from sort of a key role in the second of the new trilogy to virtually non-existent in the third. But you're right, Finn's character sort of dropped off a fair bit too, and it did smack a smidge of tokenism, and I'm sure he has better insight than we do. Although, what, you know, Billy Dee Williams, you know, life was hard for him too, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, that was the claim, like, when, even back then in 1978, 79, people were saying, well, why was there no black people in Star Wars? So the second film had Billy Dee Williams, and that also smacked of tokenism, because he was kind of the only black person there, too.
Yeah, I think in whichever episode it was of ours that we covered The Rise of Skywalker, we brought up that Finn's character had gotten to the point where he said, all right, so Rian Johnson said, no, you can't be with the white Rey, I'm assuming. That's speculative, but he didn't continue J.J. Abrams' sort of hints that maybe there might be some, you know, stronger than friendship thing between Rey and Finn. Mm-hmm. So here's this Asian lady for you to hook up with in a very sort of ham-fisted way. And then J.J. Abrams went from there and for reasons unknown to me, said, like, well, here's this black lady who is now your love interest.
Yeah.
Which is like, did nobody think this out? And I think of at least the optics, even if it was done with, without any actual intent. And it's being very generous to assume there was no intent, but still, you'd think with your multi-billion dollar franchise, you'd have an intern or somebody who can say, hey, this seems a little weird. Let me take the devil's advocate side and you listen to what I say and see if it sounds bad, and then we can adjust from there.
Yeah. Well, and it speaks to the need for more people in positions of power in studios, not just, you know, like obviously it'd be great to have, you know, more black directors and everything else, but, you know, people in the production side, people, you know, throughout the whole facility who could be, you know, there for that kind of thing. You know, I'm sure there are many people who are great at their jobs who are also going to be able to say, hey, by the way, this is not a good look for us.
Right, right.
Okay. Well, in the wake of last week, where we had a good discussion about DC fandom and all the good things that came out of that, we got news today that there's going to be a little celebratory thing for Star Trek as well. So on the 8th of September, we're going to get Star Trek Day. And Star Trek Day is going to see Will Wheaton, Wesley Crusher himself, is going to be co-hosting this event that's going to last for about 3.5 hours. And it's going to have all these different round tables, I guess, you know, pretty much what you can call them, with the casts of Discovery, of reuniting some of the people from Deep Space Nine, some of the cast from Strange New Worlds, the original Star Trek. George Takei is going to sit down with Rod Roddenberry. Star Trek Voyager, they're going to bring back some of the crew there. Enterprise, Lower Decks, Picard, and Next Generation. So, yeah, I mean, we're going to see, let's see, Terry Farrell, Alexander Siddig, Armin Shimerman, Nana Visitor, Cirroc Lofton, and Iris Stephen Bear from Deep Space Nine, the whole crew from Discovery, a bunch of people from Strange New Worlds. Yeah, George Takei, as I mentioned, we're going to get Kate Mulgrew, Robert Picardo, Robert McNeil, Garrett Wang, Tim Russ, and Ethan Phillips, all from Voyager. Scott Bakula, Linda Park, John Billingsley, Dominic Keating, Anthony Montgomery, and Connor Trinneer from Enterprise, and Patrick Stewart and Jonathan Frakes from TNG and Picard. So they're bringing out the big guns. This is pretty cool. And they're going to basically sit down and do all these. People can start streaming it, they can watch it, and they're going to have all these different events for this. Hopefully we'll get some tastes. There's, you know, maybe a little hope that we might get a little more information on some of the stuff that might be coming in the future, and a little retrospective on 54 years of Trekkie goodness. So, yeah. Are you guys tuning in?
That's pretty cool. So September 8th, do they have a time, or is it at midnight?
It says 3 p.m. Eastern time is when it starts, so noon your time.
Oh,
and it goes, well, it's the last thing is starts at 6 p.m. Eastern time, so 3 p.m. Your time, and assuming that goes for half an hour, an hour. Yeah, so it's supposed to be 3.5 hours-ish. From 3 p.m. Eastern time till 6:30 p.m. Eastern time, and then it's going to repeat. They're going to show it again.
Cool.
This is Star Trek Day, yeah.
Oh, sorry. I thought I watched the Star Wars Day stuff last year.
Well, yeah, because they do Star Wars Celebration is an annual event, and they do a lot of stuff there. We got DC Fandom. You know, D23 has got a little bit more Marvel in it than it did just Disney before, so they've kind of got their own thing. So this is, they've kind of got their own little thing going. I do wonder if it's just going to be a celebration where people are just, you know, reuniting and talking, or if we're going to get some, you know, more information, trailers, games, who knows what, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I watched some, there's like a women's film festival thing happening on Turner Classic Movies right now, and they've got the two lady hosts, or, you know, they're regular hosts, and they're in very nicely framed boxes, as opposed to, so it doesn't look like your mom's Zoom call, right? I wonder if that's going to be the future of these kind of events. Like Jaime and I saw the Mythic Quest people talk at WWDC, and they did the same sort of thing. They had a panel chat where the actors were basically in their little, you know, like Brady Bunch look, you know, the nine views and talking to them. I wonder if it's going to be something like that, or rather than having people walk around on stage. I know that Jonathan from Frakes has been doing some stuff with online chats with people. So, yeah. I wonder if that's going to be the future of TV for a bit.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Just going to mention that that's all going to be on StarTrek.com. So it's not hard to find.
Cool. Yeah, there's a trailer here too, which we'll link in the show notes. Alrighty.
And next up, staying on the Star Trek theme, as that is the raison d'etre for our podcast, there's news again today that there's going to be a few new cast members that have been revealed for Star Trek Discovery Season 3. And a couple of the characters are particularly of interest because they're going to be the franchise's first explicitly non-binary and transgender characters. So we've obviously, we've had a gay relationship, a explicitly gay relationship in the last few seasons between Stamets and Hugh Culber, the Doctor. But this will be the first time that we're going to see characters that sort of fit more into these broader areas. So we're going to get, let's see, their actors' names here. Ian Alexander, who was in the OA, and a newcomer named Blue Del Barrio. Alexander is going to be playing a Gray, who is an unjoined Trill, who is eager to fulfill his lifelong dream of being a Trill host, but he'll have to adapt when life takes an unexpected turn. And Barrio will be playing Adira, a young but confident person with memory loss who forms a bond with Lieutenant Commander Stamets and Hugh Culber. So, again, nice to see some diversity and representation, and nice to see that after obviously taking a pretty good pounding for about 50 years of not being very good at representing a spectrum of sexuality, it's nice to see that they're making strides more and more.
Well, I mean, you can sort of accuse Star Trek of that in general, because they've always sort of had two arms, two legs, two eyes, ears, you know,
mm-hmm.
and a nose.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously they've always sort of had polar characters, like male and female, even in Odo's culture, where you sleep in a bucket, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you don't really have a form. They yeah. they seem to feel that they had to polarize into male and female gender types, right?
Yep. No, it's I think it's a long overdue and most welcome thing.
Yeah, we talked about last episode that while it is on the one hand kind of a bummer that you know it's in you know well into the sixth decade for the Star Trek series to move this way. A big part of that is you know what's possible for them to do and push the boundaries on and be progressive about given the context of its era. And we talked about how in the 1960s, it was very progressive for multiple reasons. But if you took that same series and pretended it didn't exist and bring into the 2020, we'd be horrified at how yeah. problematic it is. Even though it was very progressive for the time, as we've made progress, it's not so much. So I definitely look forward to, you know, the future era, maybe in 2030 or 2040 at the latest, where we're looking back and thinking, wow, remember when it was a big deal that Star Trek Discovery had its first explicitly trans and non-binary characters, and it'll just seem weird because it's like, yeah, well, of course they do, right? That's just better representation. Mm-hmm. Similar to Supergirl that broke ground by having Nicole Maines play a yep. trans character, or I believe she's trans herself as well. So yep. double kudos there for having somebody
actually hiring somebody of that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And she's great. She's great on the show.
Yeah, she plays the dreamer who has a relationship with Brainiac. Mm-hmm. So very good for that one.
Yeah, and that one's it's dealt with it. Both explicitly and in some with some subtlety, which is nice. That's my only concern whenever I hear these sort of casting announcements is obviously long overdue, obviously very important, but I also want to be mindful that I don't want to get beaten down with it. Like it has to be played very properly. And I think Supergirl's done a wonderful job of using that character very effectively. And I hope they'll do the same on Discovery, where it's not just, they're not just there for, again, tokenism for, you know, to try and show some diversity, which is always welcome. But I want those people to be real characters. I want them to have truth to who they're representing.
Yeah, and I think the big part, if it's not too late for the writers, and hopefully they've already considered this, for folks who are writing this sort of stuff, the key thing is the fact that they're trans or non-binary should just sort of be an attribute of who they are, but it shouldn't be the entire description of their character.
Yeah,
right. Well, just like when yeah. I think of the Dreamer character in Supergirl, trans is not like how I describe the character. I might if it was like, oh, here's these other attributes of this person, right? She's you know, brunette, you know, she wears glasses, that sort of thing. But the character and who they are and how they would interact other people in certain contexts is not explicitly driven by the trans factor. And mm-hmm. I hope that's the case here as well, where these folks might happen to be non-binary and trans, but that's not the entirety of their character.
Yep, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. There's an interesting, I don't know if you guys ever watched Shameless, but I know it's not sci-fi, but it's a family of people, I think Chicago or Boston, Chicago probably. And one of the characters is gay and, you know, he kind of grows up he starts out as a young kid and teenager and kind of grows into a man. And in the later seasons, last two seasons, he's had a relationship with a trans man. And it's played by a trans actor too. So It's really, really well done, to the point where you wouldn't know, like, until the character actually reveals that that's the case, right? So, and that was handled really well too.
Good.
Anyway, so yeah, next, I keep thinking about, you know, I saw a commercial the other day for this movie at the IMAX, and again today on the Space Channel. So tempting, you know.
You're thinking about it, aren't you?
Come for the movie, stay for the COVID.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Speaking of, as we're talking about Tenet, obviously, Tenet is, it was the first sort of blockbuster to come out in the pandemic era, and it apparently did surprisingly well at the box office over the last week. It hasn't obviously opened in the United States yet. It's opened in Canada and some other territories, but it's done quite well. But one thing that is apparently has been trending out of this is the fact that while it is apparently an incredible visual delight to watch this film, it's also been a little bit raked over the coals for its sound mixing. So there's been a bunch of social media posts and people commenting on the fact that no matter how good it looks, that during some of those action scenes, it's almost inaudible to hear what the actors are saying. And they said, you know, given that Christopher Nolan's films can be a little bit dense and complex as it is, they say that it can be really challenging because you're trying to figure out what's happening in the midst of some scenes that are incredibly visually overloading, as well as, you know, there's obviously a lot of cacophony and the sound going on, and you have no idea. Like, you almost are fishing for the subtitles button.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's funny because we joked last week that, you know, Nolan's films are kind of meant for big screens. They're very cinematic. They really do justice to why you go to a movie theater to see a movie. This is a circumstance where you're almost thinking, well, maybe it would be better to watch it at home because you can turn the captions on and see what everyone's saying to one another.
Or hit rewind to watch the scene again.
Yeah. So interesting that that's sort of the result out of this. Although, again, mixed with this is the fact that everyone is saying that it's, you know, it's a complex movie. You do have to try and obviously figure it out, as you do with a lot of Nolan's movies. But they say it is very, very, very engaging visually, and that the performances of John David Washington and Robert Pattinson are apparently quite good, too. So, again, I'm with you, Tim. I'm sort of kind of tempted to go, but also trying to maybe fight that urge. I don't know.
Yeah,
just go sit very still and put on like two masks, then can we go?
Yeah, and a raincoat and hazmat suit.
I was gonna say, can we get a couple of those M&M looking hazmat suits?
So I might have an unconventional way of getting around this sound mix problem. So in my household, we tend to watch things with closed captions on and subtitles on, and neither one of us has any sort of hearing impairment. It just ends up being useful, right? Sometimes there are accents that are challenging, as an example, right? Depending what we're watching, or sometimes it's in a language we don't understand, and we like subtitles over dub. So I'm guessing there probably are showings that do have closed captions for the hearing impaired at your theater might be an option for you to get around the "Dominic, I was, I put on a mask" sort of thing, right? If that's a problem, I have a solution for you to still enjoy your theater going experience.
Yeah, well, now you've got the option, folks. Now you know how to solve this problem.
So wait, were you trying to do, what's the character from the
third? It's Bane.
Yeah. Tom Hardy as Bane.
Dark Knight Rises, yeah.
Yeah, people complained in the theater, and I think they did change the audio mix a little bit to make him a little bit easier to understand.
Really? People didn't understand what he was saying?
I think it was the first trailer that came out. People were struggling with it, and they were saying, you know, well, that better be better when you actually go to the theater. So I don't know if they actually changed it or not, but I didn't find it a problem in the theater. I mean,
no,
obviously it's harder, but then the joke of course was that a couple of years later than Tom Hardy does Dunkirk, which is another Christopher Nolan movie, and he plays the pilot who's wearing the mask the whole time, and of course he's once again mumbling into a mask for the entire length of the film.
I mean, I enjoyed his character in The Revenant, who did not have a mask but had a very, very heavy accent, and I understood every like third word and still loved the performance.
Yeah, or the one where he played twins and they both had heavy, heavy accents.
Yeah. Well, good acting overcomes, I guess.
Yeah.
And last but not least in our news feed here, we've got some fun stuff to leave on. The Global Batman Day celebration is on September 19th, and they always try and do some fun stuff. Obviously, this year, things are a little different. Usually, there's fun stuff to do when you go to your local comic store, and they'll have activities, and they'll have, you know, people dressed up as Batman and stuff like that. It's really fun. But this year, they've added a little fun wrinkle ahead of time. So if you happen to be a fan of using the Waze app to get from place to place, you can now change your Waze audio so that you can have Kevin Conroy, the Batman from Batman the Animated Series, give you directions. And not only can you listen to Kevin Conroy as the Batman give you directions, but they will actually change your icon on the screen to a little Batmobile. So I don't use Waze, but I'm gonna.
It kind of seems like it'd be wrong not to.
It really does.
When you have this opportunity.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of details. If you go to dccomics.com, there's a bunch of different stuff. So they're offering some free digital comics. They've got some activity kits you can print out for the kids. They've got, you know, some different stuff that you can tune into, some special products and stuff like that. So there's all kinds of stuff going on for Batman Day. It has turned into kind of a thing in its own right. But that was the one that really jumped out at me as something that's just super fun and silly. And I mean, when I read a Batman comic, and I've been reading Batman comics since I was a kid, when I read Batman, Kevin Conroy's voice is what I hear.
Oh, really?
He is my Batman. Due respect to Adam West, who I deeply love, but yeah, my Batman voice, unquestionably Kevin Conroy.
No, I mean, like I think I told you before, the only show I was allowed to watch in England was Batman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was a long way. I wouldn't necessarily say I'm tied to Adam West, but of course I did watch that quite often when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I'm just scrolling through some Batman t-shirts right now to see if I can find one with a vintage logo, but they're all sort of the current, you know, iterations for Batman Day, right?
There you go.
Yeah, with the old the blue Batwings, you know, with the Batman logo on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, well, we're at that part of the show where we talk about Star Trek Lower Decks. And this time we're talking about Cupid's Errant Arrow. Cupid's Errant Arrow?
I think it's Cupid's. Sorry, that might be my bad.
Okay.
Do you want to try that again?
No. It was bad enough as it was. Yeah, so let's dig in. And Jonathan's doing the recap this week. Yeah, interesting point. I did make a note of the first point you've got here, too.
Yeah, so in the first time, now our fifth episode, there's no cold open. It just starts with the credits, which I kind of caught me off guard. I thought maybe that I had maybe accidentally pressed a fast forward or missed something, but there was no cold open on the episode of Lower Decks this week. So that was an interesting way to start. So we start our episode with the Cerritos is in orbit of Mixtus 3, along with the USS Vancouver, a Parliament-class vessel. And they are there because a moon is about to collide with a planet, and they are there to demolish the moon before it can impact. Now, this is complicated by the fact that there are a bunch of different stakeholders from the planet who are all there in the captain's ready room bickering, or I guess in the conference room bickering, and they can't all agree on all these different problems. So one person is saying, well, we worship this moon and we can't destroy this moon because it's part of our worship. And one of them is saying, well, the moon affects our tides and our tides affect our crops. How are we going to be able to water our crops if the tides are changed because of the moon? And one person says, well, this is generational land and you can't mess with our generational land. And then, of course, one of them pipes up and says, it's a conspiracy to trick us out of our moon. And
the government wants to control us.
Wants to control us by taking away our moon. So while Captain Freeman deals with that, we head below decks where Boimler announces that he is going to be meeting with his girlfriend. And of course, this is some interesting news given that, A, Boimler's a dork, and B, that, he's got this quote unquote real girlfriend. And Mariner, of course, is very dubious of the fact that he actually has a girlfriend. He's been talking about her nonstop. Her name is Lieutenant Barbara Brinson. And he's, so super stoked because she's on the Vancouver and he's going to get a chance to see her again. And yeah, as hot as a hopped up Q on Captain Picard day, I think is what he describes her as. Mm-hmm. So Mariner, of course, says, no, she's a hologram. And he says, no, I stopped doing that. Don't do that anymore. And she says, either way, I'm going to hit her when I see her just to make sure she's real.
Well, I'm going to wave my hand, push past my hand through her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he says, you're going to hit skin.
You're going to hit skin. That's right. That's right. We cut to below decks, even more, I guess. And we cut to, Rutherford and Tendi, who are working on repairing part of the Cerritos, and they're talking about how much they both love the Cerritos. Rutherford says it smells like toasting marshmallows on a cool night, as something is slowly burning beside him underneath one of the control panels. And both of them talk about how great it would be to work on something like the Vancouver, which is a much bigger, fancier, newer ship.
So those T-88s, and they're not even out yet.
That's right. They've got the T-88 scanners. That's the best ones. So yeah. We go back over to the Vancouver, and there Mariner and Boimler run into Barb. And the first thing that Mariner says is, computer end program.
Yeah.
Which
yeah,
was a good one. Was a great line. It made me laugh. And of course, she's real, and she jumps into his arms, and they kiss, and it's really sort of weird. Like, Boimler sort of seems kind of cool with it, and, you know, he's sort of, you know...
He says, we kissed. Did you see that?
Yeah, we kissed. Did you see? And yeah, she sort of says, you know, oh, you know, he's got this sort of exudes this kind of primal confidence. And, you know, Mariner is just aghast at the fact that we're getting this. And we also meet Jet, who is one of the crew of Cerritos as well. The hottest guy on the Cerritos, apparently. And he is, apparently he also knows Barb. And so that's a little sort of awkward. We find out that Brad Boimler's real name is Bradward.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that's made up because I don't think I've ever heard of anybody called Bradward.
Nope.
So he's kind of disappointed because he's going to take her for this very fancy meal. But because of this crisis with the moon and everything, they have to cancel that. And Jet, the cool hot guy, and Barb are going to head down to work on that problem. And Boimler has to go amuse himself for a little while. And of course, you can tell immediately he feels threatened by Jet because Jet is twice his size and cool and good looking and funny, and Barb is laughing at all his little jokes and everything.
It's not like I cooked a 10-course meal.
We cut to Tendi and Rutherford, who are meeting with Lieutenant Commander Docent, Ron Docent, who is there, and he basically says, you know, hey, you know, you guys are really into these, you know, T-88s. You clearly love the ship. I tell you what, you guys go and do these diagnostics for me, and whoever finishes checking them first gets to keep their T-88. And they said, what, like keep like for the afternoon? No, you get to keep them. You get to take them. You get to keep them. And Tendi slaps him across the face and says, I'm sorry, I'm just checking to see if this is a dream. So they're super psyched to be on board this cool ship with the cool gadgets. So then we cut back to Mariner, who of course now is getting her full paranoia on. She is, you know, talking about, you know, I'm not sure Barb is what she pretends to be, and I'm suspicious about this. Meanwhile, Boimler is nervous about Jet, who he describes as a Kirk sundae with a Trip Tucker sprinkles on top. Which, again, like, good one if you're a Trek fan, obviously. Kirk's an easy one. Trip Tucker, you gotta want it. So Mariner's convinced she's an alien, she's gonna eat you, or she's a Romulan spy, or she's a salt succubus, or an android, or a changeling, or a sexy person in a romper who'll try to murder you for walking on the grass.
On the grass, that's the best line.
Which is, again, a great callback to TNG. And, of course, her paranoia is built on truth, so they flash back to her being on the Quito, and she's there with one of her friends. Her friend has this sort of perfect boyfriend, and they're talking about how great they are together, and, of course, it turns out that he's a Harvungian shape changer and mauls her friend. So she's determined to not let this happen again. I also made a point in here about the hair that they put on Mariner is pretty excellent. cut back to the bridge, and there is the captain, Captain Freeman, trying to solve these issues. She says, okay, listen, we've got all these issues. I can deal with this. 3 tons of moon dust. We're going to take 3 tons of moon dust, and we're going to bring it down so you guys can continue to worship the moon dust. We'll put some gravity systems in for the tides. We'll fix that. We'll relocate the homes from the 6th moon to the 5th moon, because technically it would be the 5th moon again. And then that just leaves one guy, and one guy is staying in the room, and he says, no, you guys, you've solved all these problems. You can't solve my problem. This moon is blocking the pollution from hitting the moon where my people are. And so she's like, oh, okay, well, you know, we're Starfleet, we can figure this out. And he's saying, no, you're it's genocide, you're gonna kill us. So she's trying to figure this problem out. Cut back to the Vancouver, and Boimler, who's now paranoid that his girlfriend is spending time with cool guy Jet, decides he's going to crash the meeting that she's in. So he shows up and he kind of makes an ass of himself, and he, you know, disrupts thing. And of course, Jet just seems even cooler by comparison. And Mariner sneaks into the room and turns on her Troy Carter and turns on this incredibly loud blaring noise that everyone has to cover their ears for. At which point she says, oh, sorry, that was just you, Troy Carter, my bad. And it was actually set to disrupt positronic brains. So she's like, oh, she's clearly not an android, because that would have, if she was, she would have been like wiped out by that. So we're getting sort of this deeper into the paranoia, and in a very, very Trek fashion, we're getting deep into the paranoia of, well, this is how relationships go, right? On Star Trek, if you're in a happy relationship, something must be wrong, because that's how things work on Star Trek. We cut down.
Red alert.
Yeah. We cut down to Tendi and Rutherford, and of course they've got these T-88s, and they are just going gangbusters, and they're doing their scans, and they turn into a competition. Rutherford turns on his ocular implant and is trying to go even faster, and the two of them are trying to outdo each other because they both really want to keep these T-88 scanners. So then we cut back to Mariner and Boimler. Boimler's bummed because he looked like an ass in front of his girlfriend, and Jet looked even cooler, and Mariner's going deeper into the paranoia hole. She says, okay, so I haven't got it figured out. She's got the paranoia board up on the wall with a string tying things together. It's got pictures of Klingons and Cardassians and different ships, and she says, well, you know, maybe she's a Cardassian spy, or maybe she's a transporter clone. I've got it. She's a Sulaban, which, yeah. Again, deep cuts. You gotta, you know, Enterprise. Boimler decides, okay, I gotta be cooler. That's the problem, is I'm not cooler. So he tries to getting buff. So he does like 2 push-ups and then passes out. And then he decides, okay, I'm going to ask the replicator to replicate me an outfit based on the coolest people in Earth history, and ends up with this rather comical outfit that's part leather jacket, part, what do you call those ones with the sports jackets from high school?
Like a Letterman's jacket?
Letterman's jacket. That's exactly it. Good.
With the Marty McFly boots and the Michael Jackson.
That's right. And of course, he just looks like a clown. He goes in and goes into the cafeteria, and he sees her there, and he picks her up just like Jet did. But of course, he's straining to pick her up. He goes over to the replicator and he orders a hot beer, and then changes his mind. No, I meant cold beer. And he ends up tripping and spilling the beer all over his girlfriend. She's ticked off. Meanwhile, while this is all happening, Mariner reaches in behind and cuts a lock of Barb's hair off. Convinced that she's now a reptoid, and we drop
a bleeped F-bomb too.
That's right. That's another bleeped F-bomb. And when Boimler says, you know, what's wrong with you? Like, why are you so convinced that she's something else? She said, well, she said you're sexy. That's her tell.
Right.
Boimler ends up trying to, go back and make amends. He walks into the tractor bay and he hears what he thinks is sex. It sounds like Jet and Barb are having sex. He ends up busting around the corner, and they were just obviously working on the ship. You know, he's worried, oh, I've screwed it up. I'm so sorry. I've screwed it all up. You're not going to want to be with me anymore. She says, no, it's not a big deal. Let's just start the day over. Let's just work it out from here. I understand. Obviously you're just upset. You know, Jet and I aren't doing anything, you know, nothing's happening, it's gonna be fine. And then Mariner runs at her and dives at her and pulls her pants down and pantses her. Because she's convinced that she's a reptoid, and the reptoids implant their eggs in you by stinging you with their tail. So she's trying to find her tail, so she rips off her pants. Barb quickly pulls her pants back up and sort of says, you know, no, this is just, you know, you're wrong, move on. And she and Boimler leave, at which point Mariner finds this little strange thing on the floor that's an exoskeletal husk, a little, what looks like a, I don't know what,
a
bean pod?
Of some type, yeah.
Yeah. We cut back to the duel between Tendi and Rutherford, and they both go in and they both, you know, basically finish the exact same time, and Docent, the lieutenant commander, says, well, you know, congratulations, you guys tied. You both get to keep your T-88s and, you know, put them to good use here on the Vancouver. And they say, well, what are you talking about? He says, oh, yeah, you know, you guys are both being transferred over here. I when I said you guys get to keep those things, I meant you get to keep them because you're going to be here working on this ship. And so they're both kind of aghast that, oh, wait, we had no idea that's what we were getting ourselves into.
Do you think that voice is Matt Walsh? I'm looking at the list of people on the show.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I looked at that, too, because I noticed that Jillian Jacobs is listed as one of the voices, and so is Matt Walsh. And I thought maybe Jillian Jacobs was doing the voice of Barb. Jillian Jacobs, yeah, of course, from Community, yeah. Right?
Yeah, and Lauren Tom's in this too. She's the girl from Futurama.
Amy. Yeah. We cut back to the fact that Boimler and Barb have gone to one of the orbital platforms that's working on trying to get the moon destroyed, and having found this little husk, Mariner is now even more convinced that something has gone wrong and that something bad is going to happen to Boimler. So she hits her comm button and says, emergency transport from here to platform Gamma, authorization, was it Mariner 8? And the voice comes on and says, you don't have authorization for this. And who is this?
That's a made-up name.
Yeah, yeah. Why are you doing this? And so she ends up basically grabbing a spacesuit and jumping out the airlock and propelling herself out to this orbital platform so that she can get there. And when she stumbles into the room, she finds naked Brad sitting in the chair, who thought he was going to be there with his girlfriend, and she's disgusted and he's horrified. She says,
he stands up and he's being bleeped out
too. Yeah, that's right. He's fully nude, but he's got his black bar over his stuff. And so she says, you know, I found this husk for a neural parasite, so something's gone wrong. And he says, you don't know what you're talking about. And of course, then the platform gets jarred. He falls backwards and is knocked out, at which point Barb comes in, and Barb and Mariner both think that they are on the right side of things, so they start fighting. Cut back to the scene with Tendi and Rutherford. They're now starting to get a little depressed because as much as they really thought the Vancouver was cool, they're really, really sad at the idea of leaving. So they decide to go back and see the lieutenant commander. And he sort of says, you know, hey, you know, all I have to do is press this button and you guys are going. I don't care if you want to go or not. So they steal his pad device, his instructions on there, and they start running away, and it starts turning into a bit of a farce there. We cut back to Barb.
I like the part where before they get in there, where they're talking about, you know, Vancouver's the doors that go whoosh, and they both go whoosh.
Yes. Yeah, it's a good line. We cut back to Barb versus Mariner, and the two of them are having a fight, and we cut to the flip side of this where Barb is saying, you know, I thought you were maybe a rogue holodeck character when I first met you. And then I thought you were a Breen infiltrator, but now I know you're a parasite. And Mariner says, I'm not a parasite. You're the parasite. So the two of them are both bringing up, of course, all these tropes that have worked through 54 years worth of Star Trek. Cut back to the bridge. Captain Freeman's got this one last person to deal with. You know, all this is happening and the moon is about to crash into this planet. And she's talking to him and he says, well, you know, you can't do this. You're going to ruin civilization for the both of us. And she says, wait a minute, both of us? How many people are on this moon? And he says, well, there's two of us there. Just me and my wife. We're rich, you know. And she says, okay, that's it. We're going to resettle you guys. We're going to blow up the moon. And he says, no, you're a monster. We just redid the floors. Barb and Mariner realize that they were both obviously mistaken, and they bond over the fact that Brad is a dork. And when they're having this little bonding session, Barb reveals that, you know, Boimler made a fool of himself at one point, shaking hands with a Lorschen's egg sack. Mm-hmm. And she says, listen, you know, if you don't trust me still, it's fine. Just scan me and you'll know that I'm human and it's fine. So Mariner says, okay, fine. So she scans her and she turns out to be human, but there's a parasite detected on her scanner. So something's still wrong. We cut back to Docent chasing down Rutherford and Tendi and pointing a phaser at them. And he says, listen, I don't want to stun you. I'm going to do anything here, but you guys have to give me back my pad. And he ends up stunning Rutherford's hand. And then he drops the phaser and he stuns him again in the leg. And they open it up by finding out that his password was Riker. And it turns out that what he was doing was transferring himself to the Cerritos and transferring them to work on the Vancouver. And he says, I don't want to be Epic anymore. I don't want to work on the Dyson Sphere. I don't want to solve all these major problems. I just want a nice, quiet life. So they say, okay, fine. We'll, you know, we won't report you, but we'll take two T-88s to go, please. And he says, fine. All right, fine. I'll give you two T-88s. Cut back to the platform and they scan again to find out where the parasite is, and it turns out it's in the back of Boimler's head. So they open it up and it's this little weird creature who speaks English and was attached to him and apparently was the thing that was making him chemically irresistible and keeps uttering the phrase lover.
Lover, lover, lover.
And so they pull this thing off and they put it in a jar and Brad says, well, without this thing, you're not going to want to be with me anymore. And she says, well, you know, I just want to, it's not you. I just really want to focus on my studies, mainly studying this little guy. And so Brad unfortunately loses his lover. And, but it's okay. Cause he's got Mariner, and Mariner saved him, and it's all good. And then we finish up with Tendi and Rutherford, who are back in where they were fixing things on the Cerritos, and they're happy to be home, happy to be there. And they turns out they both stole a bag full of T-88s from the Vancouver. And so they're going to be the stars of the show. Cause not only do they have T-88s for themselves, but they have them for their friends.
Cool. Good episode. A lot of little throwaway lines that you know, like the Kirk Sunday with the trip
Trip Tucker
sprinkles.
Trip Tucker sprinkles. Yeah, that's a great line.
And the pajama, dressed in pajama or onesies or whatever, who arrest you for walking on the grass.
Yeah.
The little lines like that. Interesting mm-hmm. show. I mean, good sort of, you know, back and forth double plot line. It seems to be that's going to be the way it's going to go. It's going to be Mariner and Boimler and Rutherford and Tendi kind of like having their little adventures, you know?
Yeah, it seems like there's sort of, you know, the A plot, B plot kind of, you know, they're working it like a pretty good
show. And the captain show. and Commander Ransom
right? Yeah.
They have their sort of, their higher level, you know, issues to deal with, right?
So. Yeah, I thought it was good. It definitely, this episode, it felt like what we had talked about previously, where it did lean a little bit heavily on your Star Trek knowledge. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been a funny episode, just because it's a funny episode, that this, you know, that Mariner, if you didn't really know Star Trek as well, you know, Mariner would come off as, you know, paranoid, but, you know, mm-hmm. turns out that there was something wrong in the end. But the fact that she's playing off all of these Star Trek tropes, because there have been so many episodes about a doomed relationship where, you know, oh, it's the perfect thing, but it turns out that something's wrong. Like, that has had been told, I don't know how many times, like 20 mm-hmm. different mm-hmm. episodes of Star Trek over the years. So it definitely leaned on those tropes. And as you say, some really good little jokes. I liked the, you know, hopped up as Q on Captain Picard Day. I liked the Kirk Sunday with Trip Tucker Sprinkles. I also loved that when Boimler goes to see Brinson on the Vancouver, he's bringing her flowers and a teddy bear, and the teddy bear, it looks like Geordi LaForge. The Geordi bear. Oh, like, just again, little things, little details that are a lot of fun. If you're a hardcore Trek, this is I think a great show.
Well, and the alien wall where she had all the different aliens and the salt succubus in the center there,
oh yeah, absolutely,
the
absolutely
gorgeous women that were into the salt, that were the three, you know, irresistible women but they were actually huge monsters, right?
No, again, this one definitely played off of the expectations that have been built by, you know, half century of Star Trek storytelling. But I think it works on its own, too. But again, all those little throwaway lines, you know, oh, you're a Cardassian spy. Oh, you're a Breen. Oh, you're a Suliban. Like, all these different things. You know, I was sitting here watching this with my son, and he was sort of saying, oh, what's a Suliban? Like, it just, you know, some of these things are just not, you know, you'd have to watch a ton of Star Trek to get all the references.
Right. Yeah.
But that being said, it was still funny. We were still laughing out loud at just some of the craziness and nonsense and just goofiness. The more Mariner got paranoid, the more fun I think it got. I also, did we know that her name was Beckett?
Yes.
I think her mother had mentioned it in the prior episode.
Oh, where she bonds with her mom. Yeah, I saw it in the captions. I had the closed captions turned on just like you do, Jaime. And I just remember looking at it thinking, like, did we know that her name was Beckett? Beckett, yes. And Bradward.
I'm kind of curious. Let me state one other fact. I thought it was pretty interesting that the USS Vancouver is a Parliament-class ship.
Yes, I thought so, too.
For folks who don't know, Canada has a parliamentary government system, and Vancouver, British Columbia, is one of its larger cities. Mm-hmm. I am very curious.
But Vancouver's also in Washington State, you know. Washington.
That's true. Vancouver, you guys have a Vancouver, actually, too.
We do have a Vancouver, but given the fact that it's a Parliament-class ship and this other trope that I was kind of curious if there was like a cultural exchange here, right? So I'm the American on this show, and the fact that the ship is named after place in Canada,
and potato chips.
No, what's that?
And a bag of potato chips.
Ketchup, well, potato chips.
So the ship that Barb comes from is named after a major city in Canada. And the fact that Mariner didn't believe that Boimler could possibly have a girlfriend struck me as, oh, this is the girlfriend in Canada, you wouldn't know her trope.
Oh, nice. Right. Nice. Yeah, right. That didn't click, but that's great. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that's probably more an American thing. I don't know if there's a Canadian equivalent.
Ours are, they live in Nunavut. You wouldn't know her. She lives in Nunavut.
Yeah, or down east, yeah.
Yeah.
But never on the other side of the border. They're not like Chicago.
We'd never say we're dating an American girl. That's something else. Yeah.
But that's a real thing down there, right?
Yeah, it's a weird trope of at least, media that deals with like high school kids, where you would be embarrassing to be the one loser who doesn't have any dates. So you claim to have a girlfriend and then nobody knows who they are. You can never meet them because, oh, you met them in camp or traveling or something while you're in Canada.
Right.
On your way to Niagara Falls, because all Americans have to go to Niagara Falls, too.
Yeah. And the the season of Stranger Things actually played with that trope too, where one of the characters has a girlfriend in Canada type of situation going on.
Yeah, and they don't believe him.
Right.
Yeah. Again, I think this was another good one. I think the show has definitely stayed at a pretty high level. And again, I think if you're hardcore into Trek, it definitely plays on a different level, which certainly is tickling my funny bone.
Mm-hmm. One thing that the interwebs has gotten a little hung, or a couple things the interwebs has gotten a little hung up on related to timelines and etc. One would be in that flashback scene on the Quito when Mariner is dealing with the friend who had our co-worker who had shapeshifter type boyfriend. People said, wait a minute, so she's wearing the dark neutral color uniforms that in film and in our media first premiered in Star Trek First Contact and then made their way over to Deep Space Nine in whichever season that was. It was like fourth season, right? And some people say, wait a minute, does the math work out then, given where this series is supposed to take place? And then you sort of go backwards. How old could Mariner possibly be? And that coupled with one of the things that the dead friend said was, oh, did you hear about this crazy thing that happened on the Enterprise where apparently Data, Commander Data has a brother and named Lore, and there was this whole Borg thing.
Yeah.
Folks say, wait a minute. But then if you look at that, that goes even further back to season six going into seven of Star Trek The Next Generation. And I think I have answers for both those. One, we've seen, like in Discovery, that you can have different uniforms sort of spreading out throughout the Starfleet. And it doesn't just happen like, oh, okay, on this particular day, everybody changes all their uniforms at once, right? We saw that where Pike came on board. It's like, oh, well, we've got the new uniforms. They're using the older uniforms in Discovery, the old blue ones. And we've got the newer yellow ones. And the other thing I'd say is it seems pretty clear, given the fact that the, what did you say his name was? Docent, that commander or lieutenant who wanted to leave. Like, the Vancouver apparently is like an Enterprise-type ship that, unlike the Cerritos, is like, oh, they're dealing with boring stuff and it kind of sucks because they're always assigned the bad or less desirable command positions and missions. It seems like the Vancouver gets a lot of like crazy stuff, like, oh, we either go back to the 1920s and like kill the guy that's worse than Hitler, right? Like they had way too many adventures, and he just wanted something chill, like the Cerritos was doing, is why he wanted to transfer himself, right? And so I wonder if, you know, stuff that happens on the Enterprise isn't necessarily like showing up on the, you know, Starfleet Twitter feed, and is more like it takes a little bit of a while for the records and the you know, crew reports to make their way out into the fleet. That's what I think happens there. That's why I think the timing makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's still, because this is supposed to be set after Nemesis, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. So not, it's not inconceivable, although it's really hard. Again, an animated series, how are you supposed to gauge how old Mariner is supposed to be? Like, she could have been, and she's already said she's been like promoted and knocked down and transferred around. Like, she may well have been in Starfleet for a while.
Yeah, I could see, you know, I don't know if they ever stated these characters. Let's pretend you get out of Starfleet Academy somewhere around like the end of college age, so they're like 22, 23, and Mariner could very easily be in the like 27 to 29 range and still feel, you know, relatively young compared to the senior staff, but still just a little bit more mature than the folks who are fresh out of the academy, like, you know, Tendi and Rutherford and Boimler.
Yeah, she definitely seemed more seasoned, and they have played her that way too. So, you know, I don't think it's incongruous that she's had a life and experiences, and they could make references like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's not unusual that she should be a lieutenant, you know, at her, because I mean, that's she makes a point about Barr being a lieutenant as well. But and last week she was promoted to lieutenant, and it didn't seem to be that difficult for them to sort of consider her to be there. So
yeah, although that was mostly because her mom wanted to torture her.
No, I realize it's her mom playing her, but
yeah.
Still, yep. But still.
Well, if you're that pedantic about a cartoon series, I think maybe you're spending a little too much time with it. Although that being said, we do a whole podcast about it, so
that's true. But I mean, yeah. By the same token, though, yeah, like I think that people take Star Trek way too seriously. You know,
or even just the wrong take, right? Like, just because it's the first time that we, the viewers, have seen something doesn't mean it's necessarily the first time something has occurred in universe.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, yeah, I've read a lot of Star Trek books myself, and there's a lot of plot lines that not discussed, you know, that never really make it into the main canon.
Yeah,
but I mean, no, you don't have like Gene Roddenberry going back and rewriting episode 3 of the original series every couple of years, right? So,
right,
yeah,
yeah. I've been watching the original series a bit more lately. It's really becoming more and more like Twilight Zone every time I see it, because it's very like there's not a lot of consistency between the episodes as much as there is in the later series, you know.
Yeah,
so they bounce around in terms of technologies and the things they say to the ship and, you know, whatever. So yeah. It's kind of interesting.
Well, again, at that point you sort of get like, obviously a lot of that is sort of new, you know, they're making up stuff as they go and they're doing things differently, so
yeah,
it's understandable, I guess, at that point. You know, they're kind of flying by the seat of their pants.
Yeah, I was watching the Corbomite maneuver again last week, and then as well the cage was played again, the two-parter with where Spock goes on
with Pike,
court-martial.
Yep.
With Christopher Pike.
Yep. Mm-hmm. They have that as a standalone episode on Crave here.
What, that the whole thing?
Yeah, if you go in, they had like the original series. You can watch the original series, but then they also have the cage as just a separate
thing. Yeah, no, the cage was released as, it was the original pilot,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I've seen that. But I think I used to have a VHS of it somewhere, but for sure, I'll have to check it out. Alrighty, so let's move on to our watch list then. Jonathan, you're up first.
Yeah, so the slam dunk for me this week is The Boys Season 2, which is premiering on Amazon Prime. September 4th, the first season was, I thought, excellent, filmed here in beautiful Toronto, and one of our family members worked on that show, so extra pride there. And so big shout outs, brother. That the first season was really, as a fan of the comic, I wasn't sure how it was going to translate because it's pretty damned edgy. I was a little concerned that they would sort of be a little flaccid next to that, but it was pretty over the top. The violence, the language, the behavior, they didn't pull any punches. It was pretty over the top, but also as with the comic book, very dark humor. There's a lot of sort of quasi humorous, squirm in your seat kind of humorous stuff through that show. So I'm really looking forward to where it goes from season 1 to season 2. They obviously left on a bit of a cliffhanger as to where things left off. So it's definitely on my to-do list starting this weekend, is to dig into Boys season 2. And they also, they've already announced season 3 is coming. So we'll know that this is not necessarily going to be about wrapping it up in a nice bow. They can actually have a little bit of runway to build the universe a little more. So pretty cool. You guys looking for that one?
Forward to that too. I enjoyed season one. I'd never read the comic, but it was definitely in that spirit of like Will Smith's Hancock, mm-hmm. where what if superheroes were real and what if they were doing douchey things, especially if they're backed by a big corporation. So it all made a lot of sense to me. Like, yeah, that's probably what would happen too if we had superheroes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's an interesting take on that world of the corporatization of fame and how you know, celebrities are made and manufactured, which rings pretty true.
I did plus one that choice too, because I would have chosen that one had you not.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Thanks for letting me have it.
Yeah, no worries.
The other one that I flagged for my watch list is they put up a trailer this week for Jurassic Park Camp Cretaceous, which is a Netflix animated series that is obviously set around the Jurassic World, Jurassic Park franchise. And this one, the trailer's pretty good, actually. I think maybe I had known that they were going to do this series. It's coming to Netflix on the 18th of September. And it sort of is taking the view of, it says, six campers uncover the wonders and secrets of Isla Nublar, discover the other side of the island in Jurassic World Camp Cretaceous. I didn't really know much about it, but the trailer looks pretty good, although mm-hmm. I feel like Jurassic World is kind of hitting a bit of a wall for me, the whole Jurassic thing of like, mm-hmm. okay, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice. Like, it feels like by the time we get to, this is now going to be like, they're working on the sixth movie. This is now an animated series. Like, how much can you do? Like, oh, I can't believe the dinosaurs got out. Like, of course they got out. Of course they got out. Like, but at the same time, I will say the trailer is kind of edgy. It's got kind of a Stranger Things kind of vibe. It's a little dark. It's got sort of the Kids in Danger kind of vibe to it. It looks good, and I do think that they do those Jurassic things well, but it feels like maybe that premise is wearing itself out. What do you guys take on the Jurassic, oh no, the dinosaurs got out for the umpteenth time?
Yeah, I don't know. I saw the last one when I was down east with Adam and Peter. It was okay, but, you know, you're right. It sort of has run its course. I mean, it's I don't know, it's kind of Jumanji-ish in a sense, too, that it's kind of, I guess, it compared to Pacific Rim, this is my get your big bag of popcorn and sit back and watch the movie kind of movie. So
yeah.
I can't complain. You know, I can't really criticize movies like Pacific Rim if I watch these Jurassic things. So
yeah,
I mean, you're right. Like once the first movie was the one. You know, the rest are all sort of just remakes, right?
Well, and the criticism at the time of Jurassic Park, the original in the 90s, was, isn't this just Westworld?
Right. Oh yeah, right. I suppose it is. Yeah,
it is. It's like, it was by Michael Crichton, the same author. Who did it. Mm-hmm. The idea of Westworld is they build this amusement park with these animatronic or robotic characters. They go awry and they attack the people.
These are real dinosaurs though, John.
Okay, but it's the same premise. So again, it's not like this isn't well-worn territory. It's been a sci-fi thing since the 70s. So we're talking 50 years of, you know, this being a thing. So again, it's not that they aren't doing it well. It's not that there aren't compelling stories. It's not that it's not, you know, well realized. But at the same time, again, at a certain point, you're like, maybe don't go to the island.
Yeah, there might be some diminishing returns there, and it'd be interesting to see if this ends up expanding on things, or if it ends up feeling like, yeah, this might need like another decade or 15 years to freshen up and reboot, or, you know, soft reboot in the future.
Because
I think the basic idea is there, right? Like, if, you know, a Westworld sort of thing, amusement park, and things go wrong, is I think going to be around for a long time. It's just finding new takes, new spins on it, the way that that Jurassic Park did, and to a lesser extent, Jurassic World did.
Yeah. I will say, if you're going to carry on a franchise like that, you have to kind of look to what they did with the most recent reboot of the Planet of the Apes, where, yeah, okay, here we are once again, we're bringing back Planet of the Apes. This is the, you know, number of times they've rebooted it or tried different takes on it. The last one actually had an evolution to it. It was the first one where, hey, there's this one, and then it's special, and then there's this thing, and it gets loose. And then it sort of builds off of like, oh, actually things are really changing and the world is changing. Like, if the dinosaurs were brought back and they were getting loose, if if the next thing was, oh, hey, the dinosaurs have made it to mainland China, or the dinosaurs have made it to Argentina, or where, like, they're off the coast of South America, right? Like, if they were sort of taking it to that next level of like, oh, there's like a dinosaur infestation here and they need to bring people in to deal with it, or dinosaurs are spreading around the world or something, you could see that. And I guess that's kind of what they tried to do with Lost World, was like, oh, bring them to Los Angeles and that'll be a thing. But it feels like, again, like, there's dinosaurs on this island, like, maybe let the island explode, like, you know, maybe gas the island, just saying.
Right. Or maybe they could just, like, lean really hard and say, like, the dinosaurs, they came to Toronto and Vancouver. And just, yeah, like, don't, yeah, even pretend. Just, like, we know you're shooting the film there. Just lean into the fact that this is where it's in.
That's right. Atlanta. Isn't everything shot in Atlanta now?
Yeah. It's for Georgia stuff, for sure.
It's just like, oh, no, don't step on that peach tree.
No. All right. I mean, what do you got?
Yeah, I think rather timely with the Christopher Nolan back Tenet coming out is this YouTube video from the Lessons from the Screenplay folks, who have, it's called Christopher Nolan versus Interstellar, the Nolan Crosscut, which examines how Christopher Nolan has this sort of trademark technique, his crosscut that he uses in The Dark Knight, Inception, and Interstellar. And the premise of this particular, 15-ish minute episode is how The Dark Knight and Inception are better, in this person's opinion, at dealing with that crosscut between, you know, here are these different tracks of what's going on and building the tension in a unified way for the story, that Interstellar doesn't do quite as well, and might explain why it doesn't feel like it's building up to the same sort of crescendo as The Dark Knight and Inception do. But it's worth a watch. It sort of analyzes the Dark Knight, it's the Joker's scheme to have folks on the two different ships, you know, blow each other up, or he's going to blow them both up, and Batman trying to stop him. Inception deals with the various levels of the dream that all have to sort of go off at once. And then Interstellar's is a little looser. It's like, well, you have Matthew McConaughey and Anne Hathaway dealing with some parts in space, and then you also have future Murph dealing with stuff, and then it's a little unclear how those are going to tie together, whereas it's a little bit more straightforward in Inception and The Dark Knight, how everything works timeline-wise and how it all sort of builds to that same answering the dramatic question of, like, what is it that the story is about and what keeps the audience watching. This is worth a watch as one of those, like, masterclass sort of things if you're interested in screenplays.
Very cool.
All right. Well, mine is a couple of sci-fi shows coming up, but one of them I think we've talked about on the show before is called Raised by Wolves. Yes? No?
Is that HBO?
For you it is. For us, it's on our healthcare plan.
On your socialized sci-fi.
Yeah. But it's basically, seems to be a story about, from the trailer, it's a story about an android that raises a group of children, and they're raised without any type of religion. And when the colonists catch up, the gist is that the kids are supposed to not believe the lies, which are, you know, the religions and stuff that the colonists are going to bring with them. And so there's obviously something that happened. I think maybe Charlie Hunnam, the guy from, I'm not sure who the male character is, but he's one of the people that come along. And
from Sons of Anarchy, Charlie Hunnam?
Yeah, Charlie Hunnam, or probably him, or the guy from Vikings, the guy who played Ragnar in, I think he might be a Canadian actor, but we'll fact check for next week. But they, and of course, you know, the kids are sort of sworn not to tell the colonists who are coming that this person is an android, because apparently they're anti-android as well. So interesting sort of story. You know, you've got this sort of David Bowie looking character that, you know, from Man Who Fell to Earth type character, who's sort of very, you know, non-binary, or I guess, you know, I guess that's a better way to put it, raising these kids. And so, and I thought it was a movie, but it turns out to be a TV series, right? So that's coming out. And there's another one called Next, which is coming too, but I've only seen a quick trailer for that one. I'm not really sure about that one, but Raised by Wolves starts on Thursday. So, it starts today. Of course, Rogers, I don't know what is gone wrong with Rogers, but, like, I can't record the Lower Decks, because because it's on Thursday, and all they have is to be announced on Thursday. So I basically have to record a three-hour block and hope that the show I want to watch is somewhere in that three-hour block, right? So
that's weird.
Yeah. Well, that's what you get with socialized medicine. You get, you know, you get what you get. Right?
You get the good with the bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You sort of have to sift through it.
But the most important thing is you only have to pay for it with your tax money.
True. Or your Rogers
bill. Or your Rogers bill. One of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, at the end of the day, more than like any one of these subscriptions.
I mean, sure enough, it's on Crave here in Canada right now.
Yeah. But you got to remember who I live with, right?
So new episodes weekly.
Of Crave or the Raised by Wolves?
Raised by Wolves. New episodes weekly on Crave.
On Crave. Well, there you go. Oh, and then I can watch it on Crave because I also have the, that's why I've been watching the Lower Decks on my iPad actually at lunchtime. So
there you go.
On the Bell 5 app.
You're all set.
I'm on Alt TV on Bell.
They just added the on my to-do list. They just added that Birds of Prey movie, the Harley Quinn Birds of Prey. Depending on where you live, we've changed the title. Right. Movie just right. Came. It debuted last week on there. So that's
on the HBO.
It's on the movie channel. It's on Crave.
Yeah, the paid for the formerly known as HBO.
Yes,
right?
The movie network one. Yes, the deluxe
because,
one.
Because that's also got Jojo Rabbit.
I watched that. That was actually I finally got a chance to sit down and watch that while I was off, and I really enjoyed that. It took me
to get a bag of popcorn to watch that.
Far too long to get to it, but it was worth the wait. It was really, really, really good.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, we were talking before we started recording here, and all my recordings blew up. The Toronto Film Festival is on right now, and so I was talking to Jaime about that, and I almost got to see that last year, but it was really hard to get tickets for that one.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of regretted. I knew at the time that I wanted to see it in the theater, but just was bad timing. But it would have been good to see it in the theater. It's really, really well done.
Yeah, yeah. It's, what's his name again? The director?
Taika Waititi.
Yeah, he did one of the Mandalorians that Jaime hasn't seen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Actually, yeah.
And he does one of the voices on the show, too.
Yeah, the episode of the making of the Mandalorian that I saw was the I think is eight directors. Each episode was directed by a different person.
Mm-hmm.
Each one of them talking about how they approached the story and what they did differently.
Yeah, and it's a murderer's row too. They got some amazingly talented people to do that show.
Yep.
Like,
but you know, Jaime will never see it until he gets his subscription.
Not until come December when I can watch that in Mulan and Hamilton
in WandaVision.
What?
And WandaVision. The Marvel WandaVision.
Oh, WandaVision, right. Assuming that comes out.
WandaVision, not the boy band.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. WandaVision. I was like, wait, what? It's like, is there like a...
WandaVision.
WandaVision. I don't know how you're supposed to pronounce that. I think it's a stupid name for a show, but whatever.
WandaVision?
Yeah.
WandaVision, yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to WandaVision. Maybe it's about one division.
I'm sure there's a great entendre in there somewhere, yeah.
All right, well, I guess that's it for another week. So, hey, until next time, how do people get a hold of you, Jaime?
I'm on Twitter as @devwithahair.
And Jonathan, how do people get in touch with you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram as @jpknews.
All right. My name is Timitra, TimMitra on the Twitter machine is where I am at as well. So until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
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 You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. This is Jean-Luc Picard. Shut up, Wesley. Sorry, say again. Just the tag. Gotcha. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
Jumanji is on Amazon Prime 2 now. I have to watch that.
I watched it already.
Is it good?
Yeah. Have you seen the other one?
I liked the first one, although I thought there were some pretty rough spots.
The second one.
Yeah, that's true. I saw the second
third
one.
Third one?
No,
third
no, no. The second one was the reboot one. I saw the second one, and I thought it was quite good, but I thought that considering the budget and the stars and everything else, that some of the CGI was awful.
Or really?
Awful. Really? The parts where they're like he's on the motorcycle near the end and he's going up the mountain and stuff, like it was really rough looking CGI, like not quite Escape from LA, but like pretty bad CGI. That's my low water mark for CGI is Escape from LA.
Well, Escape from New York was on a couple of weeks ago too.
That holds up because they didn't do any CGI. It was all practical effects, and it looks like it was done on a shoestring budget, but it's fantastic. Escape from LA, they were like, what if we use these new computer technology, and it looks terrible.
Yeah. But so, there's something else I was watching too. I think I watched a bit of Event Horizon a couple of weeks ago. And you remember the Star Trek episode? I think it's the first movie done by Jonathan Frakes, and they got the champagne bottle.
Yeah.
Hurtling through
generations.
Space.
Yeah.
That's the sort of that era type CGI. You know, with objects floating in space because hey, we can make objects float in space now.
Yeah.
And they don't look like they're really in the scene, you know?
Yeah. Sort of thing. Yeah.
So, I mean, at least with the Star Trek one, it was just a bottle that smashes up against, I think, Enterprise or something like that, right? At the end of it. But,
yeah, it's the Enterprise B, right? That's when they're christening the Enterprise B at the beginning.
Right. And you know, there's the whole sort of pens floating around and, you know, empty beer cans and things like that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, no.
Well, speaking of Disney Plus, Xavier and I sat down. We were just killing some time yesterday, and we went through the Pixar section. Of course, not only do they have all the Pixar classic movies that they've had over the last, you know, 25 years, but they also have a lot of the shorts. And he said, well, which one is the first one? I said, it's this one. It's Andre and Wally B. And so we sat and watched that, which I, of course, you and I have seen that. I can't, you know, umpteen times. Yeah,
and the baby, the drooling baby, and the toy tin drum
guy. Yeah. So we watched the first one, which is the bee chasing the guy around and stuff like that. And, you know, it's 2 minutes long or whatever. And he sort of looked at it and he's like, this is from 1984. This is pretty good for 1984. Like, it's certainly amazing
for 1984.
Not up to the quality that, obviously, of today's standards. But, like, when you look back at how far back that was and what the standards were at the time, it is mind-blowing how good that was.
Yeah.
You know, I remember going and seeing, like, I don't think I saw any of those in the theater, but I saw Toy Story when it first came out in the 90s, and I was just, like, floored that they'd done this whole movie on the computers. Like, and
remember the Santa Claus screensaver that I made?
Do I remember this?
You probably don't.
No, I don't think I do.
I used to have I found the original files for it, but it was I'd actually rendered a Santa Claus in a sleigh with I think two.
Oh, that went across your screen. Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah. That was that same era, and that probably took me like pretty much of a weekend to render.
Yeah. it's we definitely have come a long way. But yeah, it's
somewhere I have a scene that I did where, and I thought it was really cool because I made a lamp and I made an apple and I put I mapped the texture of an apple, like a delicious apple, onto this apple shaped object.
Yeah.
And then, but the light for the scene is the light bulb in the lamp.
Oh, nice.
That was like amazing. Wow.
Yeah. You know?
But I don't have the file anymore. I just have the printout.
Yeah.
Low res.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Who knows where we'll be that many more years in the future?
That's what I gotta try. I'm gonna try. I have like a whole bunch. I backed up my data all the time back in those days. So probably somewhere on the drive, somewhere I have the stuff. I have Big Felix here somewhere too. I don't remember Big Felix.
Oh, nice. Yeah. The Performa?
No, I just have the drive.
Oh, you just have the drive. Yeah.
The computer is long gone.
Yeah.
So
millions.
Someday I'll resurrect them because I kept all that stuff. And it's funny because, you know, back then, you know, because of disk space, we used to compress everything. And so like it's in a proprietary compression format. And I have a way of expanding it now, but like, you know, the new computers don't even understand the file format of the drives, right? So it's like it's a good thing I hung on to older computers so I could actually restore the stuff and get them recovered and whatever, right? So
it'll be a heck of a retirement based service where you put up the lines online saying, do you have an old computer? Would you like me to unlock your old stuff? Bring it to me. I'll charge you $100. You can have all your old files back.
Yeah. All a floppy disk worth of them.
That's right. Yeah. And they'll all be like, you know, 18K.
Well, I found a picture of Carol sitting in front of one of our computers, and it was the old 6100. Oh, no, it was a G3, one of the beige G3s that we had. And there's a SideQuest drive sitting in the corner. I want to know where that SideQuest drive is. You know, yeah, I wouldn't have thrown it out.
I still have a zip drive.
You have a zip drive? Oh, yeah. Like the actual drive itself?
I have the drive and I have some disks. So
I have some disks,
You want to add that to the pile of your big collection?
I'll send it over. Yeah.
I tried to buy a SideQuest drive, but it didn't work out.
Yeah, didn't I find you a SideQuest at some point?
Yeah,
there was one at like a Value Village or something.
But it was a PC only version.
Those people, I see.
Those evil people, like Jaime used to be one of those evil.
I lived with two of them, so I get it.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, I think it's a rite of passage, you know, that they're, as they come up in the gaming world, I think all boys at some point, unless, you know, have to want to make their own PC, right? So, and you can't stop them. Like, it's either they're going to make a PC or they're going to buy a car and, you know, fix the car, right?
It's also, I think it's one of those things that, you know, fathers and sons, I think they needed to rebel a little too. They were like,
yeah,
dad likes Macs, so I don't like Macs. I'm like, yeah, whatever. As long as you're paying for it, I don't care. You want a hand-me-down computer?
I just look at them getting. And go, Xcode? Does it run Xcode? Oh, never mind.
Yeah.
Next question?
Yeah. What? You've got a virus? That's a shame.
Yeah. Have they had viruses?
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. And some malware? Has some good malware, those guys?
Isn't that, again, speaking of rites of passage?
Yeah. Why does it hurt when I pee?
Yikes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alrighty, folks. What else is going on? Well, by the way, speaking of Thursday announcements, Jaime, did you see that the iPhone 6, the Watch 6 is being delayed?
No, is that one of those they wait for us to finish recording so they can do the news?
Yeah, make the big announcement, yeah. Yeah, I saw that today, and I just noticed Randy Ritchie just dropped a video on that, too. I think one of the leakers, probably Prosser's, leaked that, right? So.
That's unfortunate. We definitely live on that sort of stuff to drive content for our talk show.
For a podcast, yeah. So we also came up with an MTJC t-shirt, Jonathan. It says, sorry, I was on mute.
Nice. Jaime, are you a Nintendo guy?
I am, although I haven't been on the latest on the Switch, so I'm probably going to have to jump onto the next generations that come out.
They announced today, so it's the 35th anniversary of Super Mario. So they had what they call a Nintendo Direct today, which is their direct marketing thing they do on YouTube. And they announced that they're bringing ports of a bunch of their 3D classic Mario titles to the Switch in, I think it's only 2 weeks. Super Mario Sunshine, Super Mario Galaxy, and Super Mario 64 are all getting up-resed versions for the Switch, and they're also doing a whole bunch of other stuff around the 35th anniversary. There's like online games and mobile games, and they're bringing back the Game & Watch. You might be not old enough to remember the Game & Watch. These little tiny handheld things, but they're going to put Super Mario 1 and 2 on these little LED handheld things for $50. But yeah, it's a pretty neat thing to have all these games. The catalog that they're putting out on the Switch now is pretty amazing. You can go back and play a lot of really cool classic Nintendo titles all on the same system now. And again, it's handheld or it's docked to your TV. So it's, if you're a Nintendo fan, like this is a great time to be in the game.
Yeah, they've got that Super Mario Brothers 35, which is a battle royale style game, but using the old original Super Mario Brothers, where 35 players are competing to be the last one standing as they run the course. It's definitely well timed because as somebody who has a Mac and not a Windows PC, I feel a little left out because Steam doesn't have Fall Guys available on Mac. And that's a game that, having watched YouTube lets players play and streamers, it looks hilarious. It looks a lot of fun to have these pill or bean shaped kind of minion like characters all running around trying to compete on the same course.
Yeah, it's kind of chaos, but it's also kind of hilarious and fun. I'm excited. The new Marvel Avengers video game drops tomorrow. I will not be a day oneer because at this point, of course, you can only get it for the current existing systems, but it's also going to come out for the next gen systems down the road. So you can buy it now if you want to play it on a PS4. Or an Xbox One, but if you want to play it on the next gen systems that are coming out in the next few months, you have to wait. But it looks amazing. The trailers look really, really cool. It looks like that Spider-Man game that came out previously, that was 2 years ago, that was like really cinematic and very, very epic. This feels like that as well. Very just huge in scope. It feels like you're playing Endgame.
What's this Nintendo thing I've been seeing too, where it's like an AR game? Have you guys seen that?
Is it Nintendo?
Like Mario Racing or something like that? Or?
Oh yeah, they announced that today as well. There's like a Mario kart thing.
Is that the one that uses the RC racers?
Yeah, it's like Unky.
Oh, okay.
Wait, but it's like, is it like actual cars or is it like AR cars?
Let's see.
Yeah, I saw the headline, but didn't see if it was. I just assumed it was small radio control cars on AR courses, like in the Flores lava sort of sense in your house.
Try and see. Oh yeah, Mario Kart Live Home Circuit. So yeah, you basically have these little what's in the box? It actually, they're like little toy cars, and you drive them around, but on your, I guess on your Switch screen, you're seeing one thing, or on your mobile screen, you're seeing one thing. And then in real life, these cars have cameras built into them. Here, I'll paste this into the show notes. It's quite cool. Yeah. MKLive.Nintendo.com/buy. That's not too obvious. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm looking at the YouTube video. It does look like you have a real card going around, but you're running that AR course that you're looking at through the Switch.
So is it a physical car that you buy kind of thing?
Or? Yeah, I think in the box you get a car and the game, and it comes with like a little track set. You basically like set it up, and then you are seeing things from like behind Mario's head from the first person view kind of, you know, or I guess it's third if you can see behind him, but you're seeing sort of what he's seeing. So he's looking around and you're seeing some of your house, but you're also seeing like the track and the things to avoid and everything else. It's basically turning
your... Oh, it's got a camera like on the car.
Yeah, it's like in the spoiler over the top of his head there.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
It's got a camera. So yeah.
Cool. So you can chase a dog around the house and stuff.
Oh, or in my house, the dog will chase it. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, it comes with a USB-C cable by me. Or is it USB-C? It's hard to see. That's cool.
Oh, it's definitely not cheap. Two varieties, Mario and Luigi, are your varieties for $99 each.
Yeah.
But I guess you get a physical thing out of it, though. It's more than just the game. You could have fun just using it as is with the little camera on the car.
Yeah. Race a real-world Mario Kart through your home. Use the Nintendo Switch system to control your kart and watch as it reacts to what's happening in the game as you boost and drift to victory. Your in-home course comes to life on screen with a view from right behind the driver's seat. Place gates and custom courses in the real world and see them come alive with different in-game environments like jungles and snowscapes and obstacles like piranha plants. Use objects from around your house to customize your course and add challenges, then watch the game transform your home into the Mario Kart world. Neat idea, but as you say, not cheap. It's $100 US, too.
Drop in the bucket.
Yep. And the other one, yeah, this game, the one that Jaime mentioned, Mario Brothers 35, is only a limited time game. They're only going to be running it until March 31st. So you're playing the 35 player game. You can play it, but it basically evaporates as of March 31st.
What do you mean evaporates?
Like it's a limited game, I guess.
Play.
They're going to not make it playable after that point.
What?
Yeah.
That's like just about any game from the 68K Max.
Yeah. Well, it's an online only game, so I guess they just take the server down, they, you know, you're done.
Right here.
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff. Toys and products, more stuff. Buy our stuff. All right, well, I'm going to go chase two young men into bed.
Yeah, I'm going to call it a day.
My beloved sons are upstairs, I'm sure, completely ignoring the fact that it's midnight.
Oh.
As they do.
Alrighty, folks.
All right.
Okay.
See you next week. Tim, you're the Crypt Keeper next week?
Yeah, yeah. To be determined still at this point, but yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
See you guys.
Bye.